and of course our volunteers for answering the phones. Please communicate with me to the email address rknight, R-K-N-I-G-H-T at WBAI.org, and thank you for listening to our coverage of the ideologically constrained debate on the economy tonight. And for Earthwatch and WBAI, I'm Robert Knight in New York.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and oh yes, the imagination. And two special things this morning, begging for money for WBAI and, but of course, Terrence Taylor, here to talk about, well, Terrence Taylor interests, which will include, for both of us, Dr. Who. Stay tuned. And of course, as Terrence was just saying, since when is Q-U-A-Y pronounced key? I have never heard it pronounced that way. I've never seen it pronounced that way, except on last week's Doctor Who. I have no idea. I don't even know what Q-U-A-Y is in English.
It's like a pier or something, isn't it? Like something on the waterfront. A quay?
Yeah, that's that sounds sort of right. You know, pier in England is a whole other a whole other matter. Let me put on my headphones to see if I've even got your mic.
I pushed the on button.
Yeah, look at that.
I thought it might have worked, but
yeah, well, got the well, you get to use the cough button there. Yeah, it actually works.
Did it work?
Yeah, it does. Sort of. I mean, other mics will still pick you up.
Ah, okay.
So the key is turn your head and cough as. Old radio term, I believe. Unless I'm
Oh, wait. I'll probably try it.
See?
There we go.
You heard it through my mic.
That's true.
Yes, indeed. More tea
from my new Doctor Who TARDIS mug.
Yes, there we go. Okay, announcements. What announcements do we have? Basically nothing. It's marathon time yet again. On WBAI, it seems like it's only been a couple of months, and well, that would be because it's only been practically a couple of months. I think we've gone 9, maybe 10 shows before the last full-fledged fundraising drive. But this one, we're back in one. It's going to run through the month of October, and it should be fun. It should be good. At least we're going to try to make it that way. And if nowhere else, well, at least on this program. The horror, you know, people are talking about the horror. There's the horror of Halloween. There's the horror of, you know, there's horror of the commercialization of Halloween, which I prefer to call Samhain anyway. But the real horror is going to come in early November, unless we're all very careful. So, you know, just take note. It is for that reason, by the way, that we're not going to be having the New York Review of Science Fiction readings on the first Tuesday, actually in October or November. In October, because, well, we had one last Thursday, and therefore I wasn't going to do another one yesterday. But then I was going to choose October 23rd. That is a Tuesday. But then I discovered that's in conflict with another reading series. So I'm going to go October 22nd on the Monday, and I will not yet announce who it will be. On November 20th, however, that is confirmed, and we're going to have two guest hosts, or host guests, depending on whether you're standing up or lying down. And their names are Ellen Datlow and Terry Windling. And we're going to have three readers. And they are Matthew Kressel, who, to my knowledge, has never read before in a New York venue, even though he is a co-producer or co-host of the KGB Fantastic Fiction reading series. And just because it fills things out, Genevieve Valentine and Nora K. Jemison. Nobody calls her Nora K. Jemison. It's either Nora or it's N.K. But I actually think Nora K. has a nice sound to it.
I always liked it.
Yeah. It works well. So that's who we have in November. December 4th, back to the first Tuesday, for one whole month, will be couples month. You know, you have to be family-oriented because it's December. And we're going to have two families this time. And I won't announce the second family until I get confirmation on it. The first family, if you will, are the annual family, annual to us, of Delia Sherman and Ellen Kushner, who were married, I think, first in Toronto, and then later on in their native Massachusetts. But they have never gotten married in New York, and I think that they should go to New York and California and get married in every time a state opens up, that it becomes legal to get married in that state, right? I think that the two of them should go to each and every state where they can legally marry. And hey, it means parties, you know? What's wrong with more parties? You know, get married in every state. Date you can, Delia and Ellen, if you're listening, which actually I think you might be.
They might be.
Yeah, it's happened before. So it would be, so that's my thing. I think, you know, a great way to celebrate gay marriage is to go to every place, especially for somebody cool.
Recidivist matrimony.
Ooh, thank you, Robert. I like that. That really works well.
A radicalized matrimony. Yeah.
Well, it is, and indeed. You two have met, right? Terrence Taylor and Robert Knight. Yeah. Because Terrence has been on the show any number of times. We'll try to excuse him for working for PBS, but outside of that.
Well, apparently,
I'm grateful.
You may not be long, according to what Robbie said tonight.
I'm grateful to be working for PBS as long as it exists, believe me. Yeah, well, I'm sure Romney said a lot of things.
You know, I didn't pay any outside of a couple of things on your program.
I was required to.
It's your job. You get paid for it, man. I have paid zero attention to this rebate. A retrobate or whatever this thing was. It's like, you know...
Bod drama.
You know, you have to comment on it. You deal with politics. I don't deal with politics. And when I do it very, very poorly. So it's like I have a very good, simple policy.
Y'all have a good show, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I have a very simple policy. Netflix. Turner Classic Movies. Something even if Turner Classic Movies would have like all election type things, although I assume they're reserving that, you know, the candidate and movies like that.
Oh, well, there we go. That would be amusing.
Oh, you could easily do 24 hours of decent election movies. And I don't mean political. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. You are so taken with your toy.
No one knew that until you had to out me.
Well, except for the fact that we can hear it on the air.
Oh, is it making little noises?
Yes, it's making little noises, dear. Terrence. He's got his IP5. Yeah. which is unfortunately the worst thing about the iPhone 5 is that it's running iOS 6.
Yes, sad but true.
That's really the drawback to it. Oh my God. He has a TARDIS mug and a Sonic screwdriver. The Sonic works on the radio.
I like it. May equipped even... to
Oh my God, that's got a nasty noise when it opens.
It does, IJ, which I rather like.
Yeah, do that near the mic. Yeah, well, forget aside from that. No, do the opening noise.
Oh, the opening noise is like
that's nasty. You don't even
it's a
need
nice
the
bursting bzzzt. Into action chunk. When the doctor whips this out and makes that sound, you know he's going to zap you.
When the doctor's going to whip me.
Well, we're not going there.
We're not going there, and it depends on which doctor you're talking about.
It's, and what he's whipping out.
Yes, or she, depending on which doctor. Well, there was always the curse of fatal death.
Yes.
Although that's not in the canon, even though it was written by Stephen Moffat. But
I like to think of it as the sub-canon. It's sort of like the alternate dimension of Doctor Who storyline.
Well, you see, and that alternate dimensions of Doctor Who storylines is something we're going, yes, and something we're going to be discussing, because I was not as satisfied. I won't say I disliked the episode, but I thought that it lacked a lot. The big news for Doctor Who fans who've been following the series in the last 3 years.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, please.
Anyone listening to this has seen it already.
Except for R. Paul Martin. Everybody has seen this. Because R. Paul, he's finally gotten to, like, I think he's finished the Chris Eccleston series, and he's somewhere in the first year of David Tennant. And if you even mention that they're, you know, on a recent Doctor Who or something, he puts his hands in his ears and he goes, no, don't tell me, we're going to catch up. And it's like, he's been catching up for longer than the new series has been on the air, although he's gotten far enough that he's also started watching Torchwood.
Ah, well, that.
So that means that he's passed
somewhere,
Tooth and Claw.
Into the Captain Jack episodes, yes.
Yeah, well, you have to get to Tooth and Claw.
Past Big Bad Wolf, past all that.
Yeah, you're past Bad Wolf.
Well, all that.
Which is.
Still, there's no excuse.
One of the better finales, although the best finale still to date, the best finale is Big Bang.
Yes. The Pandorica?
Yes. Well, the first part of it is the Pandorica opens,
right. And then
the second part of that is the Big Bang. And I wish they would just, you know, when they had the episodes in four parts, in the half-hour parts, they had one name for all four parts. You know, the Curse of Fenric.
Part one, part two, part exactly.
Yeah. And when they do their two-parters and stuff like that, they should do the same. They should just
part one, part two. They should definitely. Yeah.
Definitely. So
you
should
have combine them later for
the Pandorica. You know, part one, part two.
Yeah.
But you know, who remembers that the empty child leads to the Doctor dances?
Right.
Or ones like that, I can understand why. But the empty child is a better name.
For
the overall Blitz. And Blitz, of course, there makes just so much sense.
Yes.
But we are gathered here not just for who, but for you, or rather for us, which is to say for WBAI. And we have no particular premiums of any kind other than the usual premiums. We have the new WBAI Be a Buddy thing, which basically means you give $10 a month.
Huh, okay. Sounds like a nice reasonable amount.
You know, and it's pretty darn cheap. $10 a month and you're a BAI Buddy. A lot of people here think it's something new, but I, having
been around for
a couple of score and more,
many scores,
have two score and 7 years. How's that? Score and 7 years.
Oh.
I remember very well that we had. The regular subscription was $45 and $25 if you were a student, retired, or unemployed. And then we had, you know, the lifetime membership, I think it was called. And that was the same price. That was $10 a month for a lifetime membership.
Okay.
And I wonder if there are lifetime people who
are still paying that.
Are still paying that. I hope there are. Because one of the things that our new program director, Chris Hotsis, has been saying is that the theme for this thon is come back. And yeah, I get that. I really, really get that. VAI and science fiction have one thing in common that I mention to people. Oh, yes, I deal with science fiction. They say, oh, I used to read that. And you mentioned WBAI, and they say, I used to listen to that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's, are they still around? Is it any good?
The answer to both is yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, both have Sturgeon's Law.
Yes.
Sturgeon's Law is 90% of science fiction is pure crap. And then Sturgeon's Sturgeon's corollary is are two parts, are two Sturgeon corollaries. Corollary number one is that the 10% makes up for it. Corollary number two, and I don't think it's Sturgeon who said this. No, it is Sturgeon, is 90% of everything
is crap.
Is crap.
That was the point that I was making earlier.
Yeah.
I think it's
And it's a paraphrase, because when I had Noelle Sturgeon on the program and all that, she gave us the exact proper phraseology that
Ted Sturgeon left us in.
She does.
She does have it.
Yes, and all over a website and stuff like that.
I was
going to
say, it's on
like
her website.
That. Yeah, it is. Especially when they give out the annual Theodore Sturgeon Awards for Best Short Story.
You get it with a sampler of the Sturgeon corollary.
You see, that would be good. It's like I'm
nice.
But I think today if people saw something saying I'm in the 10%, I'm not sure that they would
appreciate percentages we don't really even know what that means anymore. So.
But I wanted to talk for a minute. You know, I should have written down before now, just made a note of what we have had on this radio show, on the Hour of the Wolf, since the last fund drive. The last fund drive ended the week after the Nebula Awards.
Okay.
And I remember that I came in, as a matter of fact, during BEA, Book Expo of America. Mm-hmm. Books used to be Booksellers Expo from America, but I think they took the sellers out of it. It's the BEA. Well, it used to be the ABA, American Bookseller Association. And now I think it's the ABA is the organization that runs it. And the BEA is the name of the event. It's just Book Expo America. And
no sales involved.
Right. And not directly anyway. And the the day after Ray Bradbury had died. Mm-hmm. It was the night after after the announcement. Bradbury died on a Tuesday, and the announcement came into the press on the Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And the show that I was going to do, in fact, with Felix Gilman and James Gates of Science Fiction Fantasy Writers of America. Mm-hmm. The nature of it totally changed.
Yeah.
But the week after that, I was armed with all of these different recordings that I had made at the Nebula Awards. Mm. And also with a number of live guests. And I've done something in the last 2.5 weeks that I almost never ever do, is I've had guests on the phone. Mm-hmm. Now, you've been a guest on the phone.
I have at one point. Yes.
That was also for the same reason I had another guest on the phone this time. You were sick.
Yes, I was homesick.
You were sick. You were homesick, and I didn't let you off the hook.
We were Doctor Whoing that night as well.
I believe we were. I believe we were. But it was a lot of hooey. And this time, because there were certain people who weren't getting out of bed. So it started with Harlan Ellison.
Okay.
Then the next week, who should have been here live, because he lives less than a mile away, but he was really sick. He had food poisoning. Was Norman Spinrad.
You can't get far when you have food poisoning.
Yeah. Connie Willis.
Okay.
Together, John Kessel and Jim Kelly, James Patrick Kelly. You know, I'm almost blanking. Joe Haldeman, Joe and Gay Haldeman, Gay being his wife.
Okay.
Something troubling you?
I'm looking around. Well, you had mentioned standards and practices, and I noticed that the sign is no longer on the wall.
Well, the sign was never relevant.
I guess it wasn't.
It was never relevant.
It was a trigger to the concepts that...
the sign we're talking about is a list of the Carlin words.
The Carlin words that cannot be said on television or radio.
Well, because...
But it acted as a sort of trigger to remind
you. But they're not correct, because any number of the words on that...
Could have been said easily.
People think, well, the FCC says this. Carlin said that. The FCC said you can't play that.
Right.
The Supreme Court said, yes, you can play that, but not in the middle of the afternoon on a Saturday.
Children might be listening.
Exactly.
I still feel its loss. It was like a piece of history, and now it's sort of
like an
old building being torn down.
And that decision has been thrown out. There is no more Pacifica versus Justice Department. Has anybody been following the news? Janet Jackson and Fox News and CBS made it all possible that the Supreme Court, A, turned over the fleeting expletives when they broadcast a reporter, soldier.
Yes.
Who used the fecal word when a grenade basically whizzed past his ear, which actually seems rather...
seems rather tame, actually, considering what one could say under those circumstances.
Yes, exactly. Golly gee whiz.
Yeah, it's not coming out of my mouth in that circumstance. I just love the term fleeting expletive. It's the fleeting expletive seems like a good band name, too. So many
Ooh, that would
like
be a great
the
band
fleeting
name.
Fleeting expletives.
Yeah.
You know?
Then Fox fought the whole Janet Jackson thing.
Was that the wardrobe
that
malfunction?
That was the wardrobe malfunction. And basically both... both cases were basically thrown out for different reasons. Okay. And part of the thing, especially involving the Janet Jackson thing, which was prime time and all of that stuff, not only was over the fact that it was on transient broadcast.
That's a spinoff album from Fleeting Expletives.
That has been done. That one has been done, and I believe Stan Freberg did a bit on it, as a matter of fact. Because that does go back to the Carlin thing. Actually, it goes back earlier. It goes back to when Ed Goodman, station manager of WBAI, somewhere in the early 70s, got a phone call from some prisoners in the Tombs who had taken over the Tombs. And in order to complain about the conditions there, they went into the warden's office and they phoned WBAI. That's what they did. Their whole goal was to get on WBAI, and they called up and short conference and bingo, they were put on the air. And the court, in order to identify who the miscreants were that had taken over the warden's office, subpoenaed the air checks, the tapes that WBAI had. And the station manager, Ed Goodman, refused to turn them over. And the court decided more or less with Goodman. Now, Goodman's locked up.
Right.
Goodman went to, I think it was Rikers.
Yes.
Or something like that. And he was very clever. He dressed up in a tux. in order so that when he came out, you know, he was actually let out. I mean, he didn't miss a staff meeting. Okay,
they let him out for a staff meeting.
Oh,
they
yeah.
put him back in again. I love it.
They let him out for like staff meetings. They let him out for connubial purposes.
Well,
and stuff like that. He was in for about 9 days, but when he was released,
his wife was never left unsatisfied.
He and then, well. That was a divorce. But,
wait,
but
conjugal or connubial? Later. I'm mixing up words, I think. Okay, never mind.
When he was released, on the front page of the New York Times, actually, he was released from the jail, but on the picture of his being released on the front page of the New York Times,
yes.
he had 9 days stubble.
And a tux.
The same, really the same tux that he went, exactly, the same tux that he went in with a tie askew. I mean, he,
you gotta love it.
This guy really understood.
He knew how to work that media.
He really did. He, along, yeah, he was a professional.
I love it.
He really got it. And but the court said that it was not our responsibility to turn over an air check because the broadcast was transient. It was, as the very words I am speaking now, this is not pre-produced.
Dust
it is not pre-recorded. That's right. It goes through transmitter. And it is then done. Now, today it might be a little bit different, if only because of the Internet Archive.
There is an archive afterwards, yeah.
And even then, in the case of this show, it's only for 2 weeks.
So, still transient.
Although I had this conversation with our program director last week, which, when I was talking to him about various things and when I mentioned the 2 weeks, he just frowned.
Yes.
And said, that's not right.
Well, that's been interesting.
He's Australian.
I was going to say it's an interesting way of saying it. It sounded like an Australian sort of way of saying
well,
it.
Well, that funny thing that.
Right's always Australian.
This is our second Australian program director.
Media.
Only the first media. One, Andrew Phillips,
the
came,
media wizards, the
came
Australians.
To us by way of Australia. Chris Hatzis lives
Australia.
In Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And came and comes from a Greek family and then grew up in Australia. And he worked for the IBC. No, not for the IBC. He worked for, which is the ABC, by the way, the Australian Broadcast Commission. No, for a different nation, continental broadcasting company in Australia. Then he came to New York. He started an internet station, which he ran for 5 years in Brooklyn, and then became our
nice.
PD.
Nice.
Yeah, right. And, nice. And I like him. He's very nice.
Well, that's good.
He's very good. I like the last program director, but he canceled my show.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing I can.
And that was supposed to be here comes the word the again transitory. It was
transitory.
Transient. Yes, it was supposed to be this particular time slot was supposed to be a way station.
Ah, and the other station has not materialized at the other end of the ride yet.
And at the other yeah, well, and because among
still,
other things that PD is no longer here. So
once again, life is flux.
Indeed.
Change is the only constant.
So,
change is gone.
But the thing that I want to point out is that nevertheless, and with a half hour less and half an hour taken out of Robert Knight's show and half an hour less on this slot, I dare say that in all the interviews and all the shows that I have done in the last, I guess it was about 11 weeks or something like that with all of these guests, and I haven't even named them because I didn't write them down. As I should have, although I will at some point before the night is out.
Yes.
I dare say, Michael Bishop. I had Michael Bishop on live. You know, one of the great science fiction writers of all time. Yes. Not that Connie Willis and Joe Haldeman.
Themselves.
Yeah.
Yes, and
not that, or Ellison, for God's sake, or Spinrad. Not that any of these people are minor. They're all major, major people. And so the premium that I have to offer listeners, the premium that you get when you call WBAI is the continuance of WBAI.
We have
some premiums, I have no doubt. We have the generic. There's a T-shirt
okay.
that I like.
Yeah.
There are other people around who don't.
Well, it's a democracy.
We have a new logo. It's a democracy now.
Well,
give
it time.
But we have a new logo, which everybody says, boy, isn't that a commercial? And it's like, no, the fact that it's handsome.
So
that makes it
independent
all
if it's an ugly logo?
Commercial? No, I think it's actually rather nice.
Is it?
And somebody else pointed out that it's, you know, looks a little bit like the NPR logo. And no, it doesn't really.
Not really.
They just both happen to use Helvetica.
Well, as does much of the world. 90% of everything in the world is Helvetica.
Unless it's Ariel.
Well, that's true.
Which is precisely the same thing as Helvetica, with some very minor point differences, just so they didn't have to pay that Swiss company
any royalties.
And there is, by the way, a very, very good documentary called Helvetica.
I actually have it in my Netflix stack and have not yet had the opportunity to watch
it. It goes on a little long, as many documentaries do.
I would think that there would be less than that to be said about the actual, but it's quite fascinating.
It's actually quite a fascinating thing, and, you know, how it got to be the official typeface of the New York City subway system, and the advantages of it, and things like that, and how people can tell the difference between the wonderful Helvetica and the... No, that's not our logo.
Not the new logo.
God, no.
Okay.
No, that's the old logo.
It's a very old logo. Okay, let's see.
Well, not old. That's just the old logo. Let me see. We'll go to WBAI.org.
Oh, that's true.
On your phone. And unfortunately, it seems... let's see. They're cycling different pictures here. Fall Fun Drive, October 2nd to 31st. Click here to be a BAI buddy. Online bidding, as opposed to a biddy. Ah, there it is, right at the top of the screen. Here it is.
Ah, there we go.
It's like a pair of headphones.
Like yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a professional.
Yeah.
It's like somebody with aesthetic artist taste.
Well, you're mad.
And the
as
new,
opposed to just hurling it at the wall and seeing what appears.
And on the website, you can also see the front and back of that T-shirt.
Very attractive shirt.
Which you get, by the way, for a $60 donation.
It's a lovely thing.
It actually is. I'm holding off for, you know, like, please, unpaid staff, don't we get a discount?
Well, after all, one would hope.
You know, $60 for unpaid staff who have access to
the box of T-shirts at any given moment. You would think they would just give them out rather than forcing you to, like, sneak into the room.
Or at least, you know, at cost. Yeah, I snuck into the room and they were out.
Tricky devils.
Well, I snuck into the room because the station manager said, oh, sure, you can have
go,
one.
Go right in
there. And they didn't have any.
Tricky. Yeah, you can have one out of the empty box trick.
Yeah, exactly.
They seem very generous. Yet they're giving you nothing.
Third time I fell for it. Anyway.
At any rate.
The point is that we have to get a phone call or two. The point
is... I'm looking at the little indicator and it's still reading zero.
That indicator is meaningless.
Oh, that's not it?
No. The indicator is on this computer over here.
I feel better then.
That's for, like, you know...
Some random nothingness, evidently.
It's
old technology no longer supported.
Our older technology that is no longer supported because nobody kept it up was the good old Edelometer. It's named after Mike Edel.
I seem to remember a story about the origin of the Edelometer.
Yes, Mike Edel wrote it
and performed it annually at Holiday
Time. And it was built into the phone system and all that, and, you know, it worked. It worked very well, thank you.
But that was another phone system in another world.
That was another phone system in another world. Mike Edel is now one of the founding happy people over at Techserve.
He's one of the co-founders of
Techserve. The founders of Techserve are Mike Edel, Dick Dominus, and David Lerner.
Someone's opened a Mac support store next door to Techserve, which I think has got to be the ballsiest thing I've ever heard of in my life.
What?
It's a very small one. It's like a white room. It looks like something out of Absolutely Fabulous because it's like this blank white room with a little counter in it. And evidently their selling point is instant service while you wait, I guess, is they have a new sign out, evidently to try to explain why you should walk in there as opposed to a company that's been in existence for decades and is pretty fairly the top of the line.
People come from outside of New York.
I mean, it's like it takes some balls to do it. Because, I mean, TechServe is like the go-to. I mean, I've got a place down the block for me. It's driving me nuts. They haven't been any good. I don't care how authorized they are. They suck.
I think secretly Apple gurus go to TechServe.
I would imagine they do. They go there to die.
And I'm not even a pro Mac. I'm pro Mac.
Yeah.
I'm just, as I always explain to people, I'm anti-Apple.
Well, exactly. I am much the same way myself.
Yeah, but you actually give them money.
Well, but as little as I can. And I hide everything I buy from them so it doesn't look like I'm using Apple products.
Because I don't
want to be associated with the kind of people you see using them on the streets anymore.
That means that you have to, instead of...
I have the little Sennheiser headphones.
Yes,
now, so
instead
I
of
hide
the white.
The iPhone and, yes, no, I won't be wearing the buds on the subway. Why don't I just wear signs saying I have a highly expensive new iPhone in my pocket? The earbuds
Please
are
mug
distinctive.
Me, yes.
I mean, iPhone theft is maybe the number one crime on the subway at this point. And when you walk into the subway and see all of them being whipped out like
it makes
drones,
perfect sense
of
because
course they're being stolen.
One of the great theft items in years before tech was the big thing.
Was the Walkman?
Ray-Bans.
Yes, $100 eyeglasses,
sunglasses. Some of them were $300.
Easily ripped off of heads on your way out of the
Absolutely,
room?
But you know, heads would be ripped off first, and then the eyeglasses followed.
Yes.
I mean, there were any number of deaths over Ray-Ban. This is not an exaggeration. There were
sneaker deaths, the $200 sneaker deaths, but I don't remember the Ray-Ban deaths.
Yeah.
My feeling is I just take the iPhone.
But the point is we need to give out the phone number here. The point is we need to get phone calls to pledge.
Now that we've led up to phone conversation.
And the number is, and whatever phone you have,
anytime.
Make that call. It's 212-209-2950. A subscription to WBAI, something that makes you a WBAI subscriber, that all works, right, is $25. Remember how I said in olden days, like when I started working here, it was $45?
Yeah. No, it's
but it's not. It is cheaper now than it was right up until like 1980 something. It is now $25. Before that was $45 and $25. It's now $25 for everybody. And that's it. Well, I'm not asking for premiums unless you really do want to take advantage of one of them cool t-shirts. I'm asking for one of two things. Either A, as the official memo said to WBAI producers who are going to be on the air pitching, the theme is come back to WBAI. Come back. Come back,
Shane.
To Mordo, we shall take you. Anyway, that's Shane. Does he ever actually say, he does say come back once, doesn't he?
I think he says come back, but not come back Shane. It's like Shane
come back. Yeah.
It's like he never says play it again, Sam. It's like play it.
I never got that
misunderstood
movie.
Shane, it was a strange little movie.
I never got that movie. It was so
it's
Alan
about
Ladd.
Male abandonment, you know.
Yeah, and but you know, also the super... he was
a stoic hero.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of a Philip Marlowe in a Western kind of thing. Only Philip Marlowe made more sense because he was grungy. Shane was never grungy.
No, but...
But Marlowe was always grungy.
Well, he was required. I mean, my God, James Garner was like the grungiest Marlowe, yeah.
No.
He was less grungy than others?
Yes.
Which was the grungy?
Elliot Gould.
Is that what I just said?
You said James Garner.
Oh, God, I meant Elliot Gould.
Yes.
No, because it's the long goodbye.
Actually, he may be
almost
weird. The nattiest.
What a weird Freudian slip, though. I mean, no, he really was a very natty one. I was totally picturing Elliot Gould in my head in the long goodbye. And
the one with James Garner is not bad at all.
Well, no, it was quite good.
It's just called Marlowe.
It's not bad, but I had actually completely forgotten that it was a Marlowe.
Rita Moreno.
I mean, I forgot he had
Carol
actually played
O'Connor.
It. No, no, it's a very good cast. It's a decent movie. But good God, script. What a weird Freudian slip to slip James Garner in for Elliot Gould.
Yeah.
Gould was great because I loved The Long Goodbye. I loved it for Gould.
The Long Goodbye.
I loved the way he did it. I loved
is
it. Also Altman.
Is it? Probably the second best Philip Marlowe movie.
Yeah. Sure.
The best, of course, has to be, without question, The Big Sleep.
Well, yeah.
So here's the trivia question.
Yeah.
What do The Big Sleep and The Long Goodbye have in common?
The in the beginning of the title?
Yes. That's it. And they're written by the same person.
Well.
The screenwriter for both movies is Lee Brackett.
Ah.
Now, William Faulkner
and we slide
gets top billing for The Big Sleep. Okay. But a number of Hollywood legends basically have it that, yes, William Faulkner gets hired for the screenplay, and he's usually sitting down, you know, with...
Knocking back juleps with a hound dog.
He's doing them juleps, and she would write the screenplay, and every so often lift his head out of the bowl of soup and say,
this is okay, this
right?
Bill?
Right? And he'd go, yeah. And she'd drop his head again.
And this is why the South lost the war.
Yeah, and there's a third writer, Jules Furthman. I would not have remembered his name, except I just did. And he had a lot to do with it as well. But primarily, Lee Brackett, who wrote, she's one of the great unsung legends of Hollywood, not to mention science fiction. I mean, she's written some of the best.
Well, in science fiction I know her, but I did not know her, the Hollywood connection.
Oh. Well, let me name a few of her movies.
Ah.
Aside from The Big Sleep. And The Long Goodbye, and those two are good enough.
That's here's a more than enough.
Here's a bad one, but an entertaining one. Hatari, directed by John Ford.
But that's fairly much later, though. Because wasn't that what the...
In Africa?
Yes.
Yeah, is that much later than The Long Goodbye? Which is probably, 71, 72?
Wasn't the TV show Doctari sort of a TV version of Hatari?
I think
in
it
some
was.
Weird way? Yeah. It was like Clemens the Cross-Eyed Lion. And it was
but
like,
I'll name a later movie, totally written by Lee Brackett.
Yes.
Totally written by Lee Brackett.
Yeah.
It's called The Empire Strikes Back.
Ah, yes. Well, that, of course, we all know.
Yeah, but that's the point, that is that she had this amazing
history.
Career.
Well, no, I mean, it makes much more sense in terms of everything. But it almost becomes the culmination of both the Hollywood scriptwriting and the science fiction career conjoining into that particular film.
Yeah, yeah.
In perfect storm.
And her husband, Edmond Hamilton, was a major pulp science fiction writer as well. Hmm. And according to Robbie Barish, who appears with Bob Fass on Radio Unnameable on a regular basis and is one of the great names in WBAI history. According to Robbie Barish, he claims, although I've never read it, that The Star Kings by Edmond Hamilton is one of several of the primary sources that...
Of Star Wars.
Of Star Wars. And when I say Star Wars... I mean, what you people call A New Hope. To me, there's the movie and a great sequel. And it may even be argued that the sequel, Empire Strikes Back, may be a better movie than Star Wars. But Star Wars is the one that changed the world.
Yes. It was the foot into the pool.
It really was. It changed everything. And people are still trying to get that zeitgeist back.
Even beyond the cinematic aspects, I mean, my God, licensing of toys and products tied to film suddenly became the most important aspect of filmmaking.
That really began with Empire.
It absolutely did. I mean, Lucas kept the rights and created an empire of billions, and Hollywood noticed that.
But that's
unfortunately, it's changed Hollywood completely.
Then also, I think that that's one of the reasons I just remembered. Brackett did not write Empire Strikes Back totally on her own. She wrote the first two drafts, and then she died at age 87, 88, or something like that. And Lawrence Kasdan finished.
Oh, which I wasn't entirely happy about, but I'd like to think that she was like speaking to him like Obi-Wan Kenobi across the keyboard and inspiring him to finish, because I'm not a big Kasdan fan.
He did a movie that almost did for Westerns.
Yes.
What Star Wars did for sci-fi.
Which one?
Silverado.
Yes. I mean, that was...
And he directed that, too.
Yes.
And that is a fun movie. That's every trope in the book. Every trope.
Which is sort of my issue with it. It's like, why don't we just throw it in the kitchen sink, too? What can I say?
There it is.
And there it is. Let's shoot it. Let's shoot it as it flies by.
But what is Star Wars but the same thing?
Well, except that I like those tropes better, I guess. I don't know.
Exactly.
You know, but it's the issue that I have with the Kasdan film. It's like, it's just, again, that sort of a thing. And I don't know. I like the other ones better. That was not
well, the other
favorite.
Ones are, I mean, obviously. Yeah, but yeah. Also, when Kasdan made... Silverado, just like when Lucas made Star Wars, mm-hmm. there hadn't, with the exception of 2001, there hadn't been a good science fiction film in 20 plus years, and there hadn't been a really good Western since maybe The Wild Bunch.
Yeah. And really, 2001 was almost considered more an art film. I mean, it was so, it wasn't... It's not a science fiction film in the same way Star Wars is. It's not the popular.
Well, no, I would say the other way around. I would say that Star Wars is science fantasy.
Yes.
If you want to
split this hair over here.
Yeah. 2001 is science fiction.
Hardcore.
Star Wars is not.
Is
Star Wars is sci-fi, science, adventure. Fantasy, action, adventure.
Yeah.
It really doesn't care how things work.
Yes.
Or why they work, or
that
anything.
There's no sound in. I said frickin'.
Oh, okay. Well, I censored you
I got the
you
R
anyway.
In there. Oh,
you got the
God.
R in there.
I got the R in there.
Oh, not so I could tell.
I was.
So, theoretically, that's assuming the delay system is
even worse,
working.
You know. Well, if it didn't, they'll have heard frickin'.
Then it's not my fault.
Now,
I remember him.
Now, on the screen, do we? I can't tell from here what the
that's,
numbers were. Where we, have we seen
it? You, yeah, there is one call coming
in.
You
that's
see,
good. That's
you
good.
You see these...
the little green things
green,
turn to yellow.
Green is not good. Yellow
comes.
Means somebody is
on
the phone.
Well, no, but we should encourage that. That's a wonderful
thing. Absolutely, we should encourage. So let's get a couple of people to call and
I mean,
pledge.
$25
because we're not
going to
hard sell this morning. I'm going to
no.
tell you right out.
No.
No. We are simply going to say, hey, we deserve it.
And we're here. And it's for the joys of people of us being here.
Especially if you are somebody who has listened to the station for years and has had, let's not call them quibbles, differences with the way that the station works and operates and stuff like that.
It's
know
changed.
This. Pacifica Radio, not just, you know, we say WBAI is in financial trouble. Forget that. Pacifica Radio is in deep, deep trouble. One of the ways that they can get out of trouble is to unload their largest assets.
Yeah.
Their largest asset. Now, I'm not talking about what has gone on in board meetings or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I am giving you hearsay. And it's not necessarily true. I'm just giving you the logic that has been the bane of WBAI since WBAI joined Pacifica January 10th, 1960. And that is that at 99.5 FM, at 50,000 watts, where all the other stations are like, you know, 12.1 or something, they're all 80 point something. I think there's like a 90.3 in there. They're all in the non-com frequency.
Yeah.
We, on the other hand, are a commercially licensed radio station in the middle of the FM dial, and the frequency is worth a great deal.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And while radio may be waning, what may have been worth $250 million in about 1980 is still worth
more than
$100 million today.
There we go.
And Pacifica is in debt to the tune of something like $5 million.
God.
So, you know, there could be a signal swap if there were a signal to swap with, which there isn't.
Right, right.
And in the meantime, there is at least one other entity out there that is looking to attain more signals in New York City. And I won't say anything beyond that. This is not anything that has been reported to me.
Okay.
This is just All I know is what I read in the papers.
Writing on the wall in terms of precedent of what's happened elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. The whole point is that we as the, you know, I think we would fight with the good people at KPFA over who's the flagship station or not. But I think that we can clearly claim to have the larger potential
audience. Absolutely.
Because of the 50,000 watts and the commercial frequency.
And the range of population in that area. Absolutely.
Exactly. And the density and all that. Well, you know, nobody's going to put down Berkeley, Oakland, San Francisco, Berkeley area
as being
minor. It's anything but. And it is the station that created Pacifica.
Absolutely.
It's located in Pacifica.
Magical.
Trivia question.
Oh, my God.
What else is located in Pacifica, California, in fiction? In science fiction?
I can't answer that.
Starfleet.
Oh, duh. Well, wouldn't it be?
Starfleet is in Pacifica, California. So understand this. When I tell you that that Pacifica Radio and WBAI need to continue, without us, there will be no reality to Star Trek, okay?
There you go.
Okay, there, yeah, you know, that's like...
It would be a paradox that could never be resolved.
Yeah, you know, 45 years since it did its, you know, went back in time and did the fictional... Yep. I think Gary Seven was the guy who produced that original episode.
Who produced
told
the first
Gene
episode
Roddenberry
of
what
Pacifica?
Well, he told Gene Roddenberry what to do.
Now, you probably have the answer to something. I always wondered about the Gary Seven episode, was if that was some sort of planned spinoff.
It was a pilot.
It looked very pilot-like.
It was a pilot, you know, Terry Garr.
But it was so set up as if it was one, and I always sort of was sorry that never happened.
For a very simple reason. It was unabashedly, announced as...
As a pilot episode.
As a pilot. It was absolutely a pilot episode
for
a spinoff.
Someone should bring back Gary Seven.
I liked it.
It was fun. I liked it at the time because of the casting. I was a big Robert Lansing fan. I was a big Terry Garr fan.
And he had
a very sardonic sort of attitude to the whole thing. And him climbing around the spaceship in the suit. The cat who becomes a beautiful woman is, you know, both an alien and a familiar.
And how many tropes from that have they taken and put into other shows?
Well.
Including maybe Red Dwarf, you know.
But Red Dwarf, I like... has taken tropes from everything.
That's what they do.
I finally got through them all on Netflix Instant Play, and it was sort of sad at the end. It was like, well, wait, there's no more. There's one reunion special, and that's it? No more?
Yeah, there was one three-episode thing.
Yeah, which is really, it could have saved me that trouble. But
it just was, you know, it was sort of like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where, you know, they've done umpteen post Douglas Adams episodes, and I believe there's more to come. And the first one that I heard was probably very clever if you're an expert on cricket. It was all, you know, six episodes and nothing but cricket jokes.
Well, that's going to be a limited
interest. We're not talking about prepaid phones here. I mean, that was it. I didn't get any of it whatsoever. And one thing that Douglas did when he wrote Hitchhikers was he made it accessible. He really, you know, sort of got that whole thing. And by the way, yes, everybody, please remember that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was a radio show long before it was a book.
Long before the book, or the 3 years. Now, wasn't it the radio show, the TV show, and then the books? I mean, I thought they adapted the BBC TV series from the radio shows, and then it got codified.
Douglas Adams allegedly wrote all three.
Yes.
I have had personal questions about the books.
And I don't disagree with your theories in that area.
But they are so personal and they are so controversial that I dare not say them on the air, other than I think Douglas may have had help in the books because he was a genius at plotting.
He was a genius
at dialogue. He was a genius at comedy.
So the pirate episode of Doctor Who is still not that great.
It's not. But he was not... but as the showrunner,
yeah,
The showrunner, he was wonderful. And besides, that's when he was moonlighting doing Hitchhikers at the same time. What he was not, and all you have to do to see how Douglas fared on his own is, check out his other series
Dirk Gently books.
And by the way, the TV show is just not that great.
There's a Dirk Gently TV show?
There was, yes.
I'll have to go look for
1 hour long, and it just really...
Well, the books weren't that strong to begin with.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I believe that when he wrote the Hitchhiker's books, he may have had help from another professional comedy writer. That's all I'm guessing.
That's all you're guessing. Yeah, people all sort of claim that he'd fallen in love and that's why his writing had suffered, but I didn't buy that. I think your theory is much more to the point.
Yeah, because it also reads like that other writer.
No, absolutely.
Douglas had his own wonderful style. And by the way, when you're calling or not calling to pledge for WBAI, please remember the first radio station in the United States
to play,
and for that matter, the first radio show
in
the United States to play Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It was called Hour of the Wolf. You're listening to it now. And we didn't get a pledge on that yellow light before, unless it hasn't been posted. But the
oh, so that does have a function, that little screen.
Oh, yes, that tells us the tally.
Ah, okay, there is still a tally light.
Yes. Okay. Douglas came around to a number of radio stations. He was on tour about the time that Hitchhikers was done. Mm-hmm. And he went to New York, mm-hmm. to WBAI. Mm-hmm. And he went to KPFK, our L.A. station. And in New York, he went straight to the station manager, who at the time was Larry Josephson. And it was, asking to be interviewed more or less.
Uh-huh.
And Josephson said, science fiction. That's Freund over here.
Don't talk to that Freund guy.
You talk to him. And I did my interview with Douglas largely about Doctor Who, which he had just started. Not just started, he'd been working on for about a year, but that was still new, and about his radio series. Now, we used to in the 60s and 70s, we were the station, we had a ongoing relationship with the Beeb. We broadcast The Goon Show, we broadcast any number of shows legally.
Okay.
We had the special transcription. They're like turntables.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Only they're 14-inch discs.
God.
That require, and they, I don't know what speed they ran at. Max Schmid would know. And they are these unusual discs that will not play on an ordinary turntable.
Right.
But we had such decoder, if you like, that we got through the BBC legally because we were all that. Now, this is before NPR and PBS existed.
Ah.
The moment the U.S. government, which is again to say NPR and PBS, got involved with the BBC, the BBC said, somebody to pay for our shows. And they started charging sums of money. WRVR, which was the other listener-sponsored station in New York, believe it or not, we had two.
Uh-huh.
RVR was Riverside Church Radio. They actually tried to become commercial. They went from what they called free speech, First Amendment commercial radio. That was their thing. They had Subway ads and everything, and they tried the experiment of being who they were, which was very good.
Mm-hmm.
They had some of the best jazz. Ed Beach was on that station. They had some of the best jazz shows anywhere in the country.
Okay.
But it was a pilot that failed. That did not go anywhere. Anyway, we had those transcription discs.
Mm-hmm.
And Douglas talked to me off the air, and we were talking about Doctor Who. But off the air, he was saying, well, I've been doing another project, by the way. It's a radio series. I know you people can't afford it because the BBC was asking, I don't know, like, you know, several thousand dollars per broadcast. You get one broadcast and one rebroadcast, and that was it. So the series of six episodes,
right?
You could get at a discount, you know, like $10,000. You know, we're not making that in a day of broadcast of fundraising in the best of days.
Right.
Well, actually, we do make that on the best of days, but only on the best of days. And somehow, and this is a story that could not be told for years and years and years. When Douglas left the station, he accidentally left behind a set of these of six transcription discs. Now on Wikipedia, under Mike Hodel was a news director here at WBAI and an occasional co-host on Hour of the Wolf with Margot Adler.
Okay.
But very occasional because he was a news director.
He
was a busy guy. And then he left WBAI to become news director of KPFK in L.A.
Okay.
And when he went there, he started his own science fiction show. Oh. Now that he couldn't be on Hour of the Wolf, he did one in L.A. called Hour 25, which is still a podcast, but Mike died somewhere in the 80s.
Okay.
He died very young and very horrible, very tragically, totally tragically.
Oh.
He was like 43, 44 years old.
Jeez.
I think brain hemorrhage or something that. It was one of those like awful,
sudden
awful,
and horribly unexpected, but dreadful. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. And there are other stories to be told about that involve Harlan Ellison, J. Michael Straczynski, and all that. They actually took over the show. But all that aside, somehow the same thing happened. Mike Hodel, about 2 weeks after he was here, Douglas Adams met with Mike Hodel in L.A., did a live show. Mine was actually recorded, but I put it on the next day because Hour of the Wolf in those days was 5 days a week. Mike Hodel broadcast somehow that somehow it happened again. Accidentally, Douglas left behind a series of transcription discs.
Such a careless fellow.
So it says on Mike Hodel's Wikipedia page, few people know this, but Mike Hodel first broadcast, and it's absolutely no. I beat Hodel by about 4 days.
There you go.
It was the week before. And he had to do it over an episode a week, whereas I did...
Just plowed through the whole thing in one day.
I plowed through 4 days.
Yeah?
4 days. I did six episodes in 4 days. Right. And it was all improper and all that. But who's the pirate? Who's the person who leaked this?
Well...
Douglas Adams, go after him. And the answer is still 42. But yes. That's how.
But the question. The question.
Yes. Life, the universe, and everything. So why don't you donate $42 to WBAI?
There we go.
There's a thought.
There we go. And that's the question.
Yes.
How much would you donate to WBAI?
$42. That's a good one. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 is the number to call.
42.
And 42 is a good number. And speaking of Red Dwarf, here's Lister.
Ah, there we go. Oh my, is it getting to that hour?
Well, he has a lot to set up.
That's true.
He has a lot to set up.
That's true.
So, because you're still using discs. I mean, at least they're digital. But they can get scratched. They're better quality than most MP3s.
It's true. Much better.
But to do Burn Baby Burn clappers, you have to do a lot of work.
Oh.
A bleep load of work, to be precise. So, and as long as nobody's in here doing a reading.
Yes.
I never have a problem with Lister coming in. And even if somebody is doing a reading,
he's very quiet in the background.
Until his show starts, then all bets are off.
Well, yeah.
First the clothes come off, then the bets come off. Okay. It's like, and for people who are
watching.
And then
watching, the music goes on.
I mean, to this day, Rick Bowes calls him the God of Love. And I think Nora Jemison had a, and she writes about the God of Love in her books. So I think that she saw a visual.
Anthropomorphication.
Yeah.
Her own work in there.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But and that was when I did when I came into this time slot just shy of 2 years ago. It was November of 2 years ago, so that explains it. Speaking of which, just about that time, I think it's November 8th or whatever the Wednesday is. Rick Bowes will be back here as my guest. And Nora Jemison will be reading just about that time.
There we go.
New York Review of Science Fiction readings. Want to take calls?
We should.
Okay. To pledge everybody, 212-209-2950, to talk, 212-209-2900. And good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Some leftovers. The correct pronunciation of the word of the night is K or key. As in the third verse of the Bonnie Ship the Diamond, along the quay at Peterhead, the lassies stand around. Yes, it is. It is K or key. I actually checked my...
But not Kuwait.
No, not Kuwait.
Never Kuwait.
No, Kuwait sounds like someplace in the Far East.
But it's spelt, well, I guess, unless one is quiet about it.
Yes, I know. Actually.
It would be a little bit here to call it that.
Or something like that. I actually checked the Stan Hugel Sea Shanty Directory, and it is pronounced key. Now, you mentioned...
I've had a shanty or two myself.
RVR.
Yes.
You know that RVR did a complete reading of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit?
Yes.
Every night at midnight, I think the guy's name was Bill Maxwell. Mm-hmm. Half hour every night. It took a long time.
Oh, God.
He did not do the appendices, thank God.
Yes. And no, he did stop at a certain point for a very good, very simple reason.
What was that?
It was against the law.
He didn't do the whole thing?
He was stopped by Ballantine Books.
I didn't know that.
You're not allowed to just go on the air and read
published works that are copyrighted.
I mean, as it is, Tolkien, who was already totally ripped off by Ace Books. Remember, the first version of Lord of the Rings was published by Ace, and they had these wonderful Jack Gaughan covers, and they had no rights to it whatsoever. They just were looking for some kind of a loophole in the copyright, which is why on the Ballantine Books editions, the edition that everybody first read Lord of the Rings in, there was a little yellow box in the back of the one saying, this is the only authorized edition of Lord of the Rings. If you respect an author's work, if you think that an author should be blah, 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 and all that, then only buy this edition. And I believe Ace Books never actually came out with Return of the King. I have the first two books from Ace. I don't have the third. And no, you can't just pick up a book and read it on the air without getting the rights.
That, so you're saying that Ballantine threatened to sue or did sue?
I don't know if Ballantine did. Somebody did.
Yeah, I had to.
You're not allowed to do that.
I had to explain to one of my readers what that sticker meant, and they didn't understand it. Now,
wasn't a sticker. It was actually the back cover.
The back cover. You mentioned Shane. Now, in the movie,
he
does in fact little Brandon D. Wilder sitting as a little boy. He does actually say twice, at least, come back, Shane. And in one of those, he says, Mom has a lot more work for you to do. So he does.
That could be taken in a strange way.
In the book, the novel by Jack Schaefer, which is every inch as good as the movie, I will have to
tell you. I hope it's better.
Hopefully better, yeah.
Well, actually,
I don't like the movie. I'm very clear about that.
Well, in the movie, most people don't realize that he is dying. In the book, it is made quite clear that he's dying because he says he slumped on his horse, riding off wherever direction he was going, not necessarily into the sunset. We had a big scrap at this, Terrence, at a Western Writers of America convention. We were on a panel, as to what the best Westerns in 50 years were. There were all kinds of things. I will agree with James. Silverado is a great film.
Yeah, a great film.
I think the only film since then that has even approached it for me is Unforgiven.
Yeah. I was actually going to reference that.
No, there are.
In terms, but it was a second rebirthing of the Western.
There have been.
A second rebooting of the Western.
There, yeah, exactly. I mean, just
Silverado
like
Silverado did popularize it.
Silverado brought it back. Right. Unforgiven carries it forward.
To me, that was like a second rebooting of the Western. Well, I mean, yeah, Unforgiven took it into a much darker, more realistic
and
era.
I am not going to be, by the way, going to go see Django, whatever it is called.
What
in December. It is a movie. It is an Italian Spanish Western movie directed by a fellow by the name of Quentin Tarantino that promises to have more gore in it than Sam Peckinpah could ever dream of.
You know, I have to confess to you, I don't know what you thought of it. I wasn't a big fan of the Wild Bunch. I thought it was too bloody.
The Wild Bunch at least had a good story to tell.
It did.
And while it was too bloody in the, you know, as was Bonnie and Clyde and all that, that was the era in which at least they did it because they were trying to shock you. They weren't doing it because they were saying, ooh, let's put some blood and gore on the screen. Whereas when you take a look at Cabin in the Woods or films like that, all that they're trying to, they're laughing.
Hostel, one, two, and three.
I believe in James's wonderful term, gornography.
Yeah, too much blood.
You can call it my term. I got it from an article in The Guardian.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did. And it was written by a woman, and I don't remember her name, and she's never written like another article since. she coined it. I'm trying to popularize it.
Now, Terrence, I have to tell you, this is fun talking shop about this sort of thing. I would say.
Of course, Terrence has a great deal of gore in his novels.
Well, that's true, but it's good read. I would have to say, when talking about, it's very hard to quantify what's the best Western, what's the best science fiction. I would have to say, if you're going to rank them in terms of three or four or five, I would say High Noon, The Searchers, because everyone agrees that was probably, maybe with She Wore Yellow Ribbon, maybe the best John Wayne. Although, actually, I think the best John Wayne movie he ever did was a movie called The Barbarian and the Geisha. Which is but it's historical. It's very
Doesn't
historical
he play
on the
Genghis
first
Khan
American
in
consul
that?
In Japan. And they did get the Japanese traditions right. But in terms of the best Western, 1960 for me, How the West Was Won, that had everybody. Talk about tropes.
I counted
76 tropes in that film.
I liked it only because it was Cinerama.
Oh, really?
That was it. Anything that got me into the Cinerama Theater, with the exception of This Is Cinerama, which, by the way, is just under re-release, everything else that was Cinerama was worth seeing. Oh, and I also take back, I did not like, or find funny at all.
Yeah.
It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which is another Cinerama movie.
You're talking about the classic comedy with everybody?
I can't believe you said
no,
that.
No, I'm talking about the little independent film from Hungary.
How long have I known you, and this has never come up? I love that.
I
he kicked the bucket?
Okay,
I mean,
no. No, that's a wonderful line.
I love that movie.
There are.
I was a little kid and I thought it was brilliant. I would probably still laugh.
I think that's a great.
The Rat Race was such a bad ripoff of it. It's such a bad ripoff of it.
But I just don't, it had people I loved in Mickey Rooney
Since
and Buddy Hackett.
Caesar, more and, frustrated
but
than
But you
ever.
Know what? It was a very, very cruel humor.
Oh, yes.
Movie. But you see,
that's what I loved about it. Well, you're a wuss. You can't take gore. You don't like cruelty. God damn it.
That's right.
But no, it was one of the most mean-spirited comedies I've ever seen in my life, and that's what I loved about it.
And,
as a child, it frightens me. What does that say about it?
And for Barbara, a friend of ours, the worst thing is that finally the biggest crook of all is Spencer Tracy.
I know. At the end, it all turns out to be
incredibly disappointing.
No, but he
I don't think he even gets a happy ending.
He loses everything. He doesn't. No, that's the point. He actually gets punished.
Oh, he's an unhappy ending. Well, yeah, they're all punished. Everyone is in the hospital.
Well, but that's the thing. I mean, they were all terrible, awful, venal people who all got their just desserts.
And then the biggest laugh at the end of the movie is, you know, Ethel Merman slipping on a banana and falling on her ass. And, you know, it's a movie for people who love, but she was so great.
She was a riot. No, but you know what? Well, she was great in this too, being obnoxious.
No, she wasn't obnoxious, is the point. She was a great flapper, a great performer.
I'm talking about that specific movie.
I'm talking about the career of Ethel Merman and how this demeaned her and how it took away the glory of one of the best performers Broadway and early cinema ever had.
Because she was... Okay, I was watching a clip from Baby Jane the other day. I was at someone's desk.
There's a movie.
But I'm sorry, the thing is... Well, didn't Aldridge direct it? I mean, it's brilliantly directed.
We're not talking about how well made these things are. But the thing is, what I'm saying, though, is...
Baby Jane did for Betty Davis. It put her in a totally different mode in her career, but it was an act of almost consummate release. I mean, she eliminated any sense of glamour of the old career in that part. She played a character that would have appalled almost anyone else. It's Bette Midler in The Rose, and to me, her I'm blocking on the name right now, but. In Mad World, her playing that part, Ethel Merman playing that part, is the same thing to me as Betty Davis playing the character in Baby Jane. It's saying, I understand everything I've done till now. I'm going to do something completely off of that.
It's a Mad World was made for kids. It's made for a young audience who didn't know who Ethel Merman was. Right. And this was their introduction to her. It was their introduction to Jimmy Durante. At least he was good in it. But they throw in the Three Stooges. They throw in Jerry Lewis. They throw in...
But I mean, my introduction to Fred Astaire was Love Boat. I mean, you know, it's like it took me years to understand why this man was important. The pre-toupee Fred Astaire, you know, the man who was a genius on his feet. And there were so many people I grew up with on TV and the decline of their careers that it took me till almost adulthood to find out why they were stars.
That's true.
So I don't fault the movie
for me as
that.
Well. Yeah. But I do. But ultimately, the mean-spiritedness, the fact that it's a kind of slapstick American humor that I don't appreciate.
Which ordinarily I don't. I didn't like Lucy for that reason. Mean-spirited and slapstick. I hated the Lucy series. It was agony to me as a child. For some reason, I guess I was a little older.
I feel exactly the same way.
What did you think of The Honeymooners?
I hated it. Okay, here's the funny thing about The Honeymooners.
The Abuser?
I call it The Abuser. You know, Bam to the Moon? Okay, here's the thing. I spent my childhood, I hated The Flintstones because there was basically a cartoon version of The Honeymooners.
Well, it was, intentionally, yeah.
Absolutely. Didn't like them. I moved to Brooklyn in 1981. I'm living on 7th Street and 3rd Avenue. There's a little house next door to me with a couple, John and Vera, who are in their early 60s. Every day, the sun would come up, and it would be the screaming and the yelling. And let me tell you, I saw when Jackie Gleason died, they had an interview where he talked about how the characters on that show were based on those people that he knew from the neighborhood and these relationships. It's one thing in a sitcom. It's another thing when you're living next door to the real source of it. And it just goes on and on. They screamed at each other day and night. They would start drinking by afternoon. The funniest thing was John died finally one day of a heart attack. He just imploded one day. His heart exploded. She mourns. Within 6 months, she gets a dog. I wake up one day, and she's screaming at the dog like she did to the husband. It just replaced the relationship with someone who couldn't scream back. But it was like the reality of that show is nightmarish to live next door to. It's actual physical. I mean, it's the constant threat of physical abuse.
To me, though,
he was Italian. She was Irish. The things they would say to each other.
There were two reasons to appreciate The Honeymooners. One is almost
the genius of his execution.
Great performers.
Absolutely. Ed Norton to me was the gem of that show.
Every one of the four people on that show were classic performers, number one. And There was a second reason, and I forgot what it was. Yeah.
But still hated the show. Lucy's excellently executed. I mean, it's brilliant timing and everything, but the woman was miserable and weeping throughout the whole thing as a child.
It was a horrible show. I love Lucy. And all of the spinoffs. And trivia question for the minute. Who was the director of I Love Lucy and subsequent? And I'll give you a clue. Many movies that he was the cinematographer of and a couple that he directed are being broadcast on various stations this month because he's a great horror director.
I remember, was it or not Carl Freund, cinematographer. The DP?
Thank you.
But he also directed as well? Because I knew Carl Freund was involved.
He directed very few movies. And the way I know it is because I turned on Turner Classic Movies the other day and Ben Mankiewicz was introducing a movie and we have it on in the background and I just hear him say Carl Freund.
Yeah.
And I scream across the room, that's Freund!
But no, no.
Mispronounced his name, huh?
Mispronounced my name and Carl Freund's name, yes. There are a lot of people who spell their name my way, F-R-E-U-N-D, who say friend.
Well, it's like our friend Leslie, K-L-A-I-N-B-E-R-G, and the family fight is whether it's Kleinberg or Kleinberg.
Yeah, well, that's whether you're trying to assimilate
Freund
or not
friend.
Is all.
Well,
and the same thing
things.
With Freund
absolutely.
Or Friend.
The same thing.
And there were a lot of people who changed their name from Freund or Fred Friendly of CBS News was Fred
was
Freundlich. Freundlich.
Oh, interesting.
But here's a good one. John Lincoln Freund changed his name to John Forsythe.
Huh. Does Forsythe translate to the same thing in some other language?
No.
No. I just... searching for an explanation.
You're talking about the actor, John Forsythe?
Yes. Yeah, it's the one who was in that Hungarian independent version of It's a Mad World. Oh. Yes, John Forsythe. The John Forsythe.
Wasn't he also in a series called Bachelor Father?
Sure.
He was. He was in yes.
Yeah, I used to watch it. Anyhow, we should move on.
Yes, well, just
we have 3 minutes left.
Doctor Who.
Are you really, is it confirmed that you are having the good... Terry Windling in November?
I have already made the announcement, and I'm not going to confirm or deny till we get there, okay?
Okay.
Okay, bye. You know, and bearing in mind that that Terry is a host, she's not reading, okay?
Ah, yes.
Let's be clear on this. No, Terry Windling will not be reading. Yes, she will be there. We should, you know, I was going to take the other call, but we need to talk Who for a few.
Just a quick thing. Well, we made the mistake of talking about while we were eating before the show, and that's sort of like I was defending
I
the final
have
episode,
it up. I was extremely disappointed by
saying,
it.
I was,
and it's not because I'm upset at losing the pawns.
No.
Although I
thought he well, the thing I did feel that he did lose them admirably in the way that made you happy and sad at the same time.
I think they could.
Me,
I'll tell you the future, or if you prefer, past.
Well,
that I had for the Ponds, had I been writing it for Mr. Moffat, the screenplay that I would have come up with is a story that somehow puts them back, the two of them, back into that same universe where he discovered them married together and all that, and where she's very, very, very pregnant, and she gives birth to Melody Pond. Properly this time.
And then they get to raise her child
in an alternate universe.
Yeah.
That because it's an alternate universe, a bubble universe that the Doctor somehow manages to create, perhaps with River, his wife, that they can never visit. And that would keep the Ponds off, and they could get what they deserve to begin
which
with.
Which was raising the family.
Which is
wanted,
raising,
blah, 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 blah.
Raising
and,
their child.
And they got into the whole thing with the last episode of her not being able to have children, so that would finally, you know... well, yes, but I mean, that's almost... too much happy. I mean, I was satisfied.
What's wrong with too much happy? I mean, for God's sake, they put Billy Piper into a sealed-off universe
sort of the thing.
With a
fake doctor with one heart so she you can like actually live and grow old with them and die and be perfectly satisfied. But my problem with that
so
is...
So give the pawns a baby.
But see, but the thing is that everybody gets a bubble universe where they get a happy ending. Now, I mean, but then it's all mindless happiness. And where's the conflict in life? Where's the drama? You know, where's
They have a happy life. We were told in the epilogue of Melody
that
Pond's
they had a happy
book,
ending, and I'm perfectly
that they have
happy
a happy ending, that they
the,
had a happy
in
life
in the late 1800s and the early 20th century. How happy could that life have really been with that modern plumbing and the internet? I mean, come on.
Well, there you go.
You drop me back without my toys 100 years ago. I'm dying of misery.
Yeah, well. There's Gutenberg's that,
movable
but,
type isn't supplanted.
You know, you
iPad.
Could have had a top. They had really cool wooden tops that you could
but,
pull the
but
thing.
My, the
and
one
gyroscopes.
Point,
don't forget gyroscopes.
But the one point I was going to make was that the ending satisfied me because the entire arc of the Pawns has been about the love story of the Pawns. And as it opened very romantically with the longing of Rory for Amy that got resolved into their reunion at the end of the episode season, for them to be...
As
to
far,
have that moment of sacrifice and reunion, that
as far as I'm concerned,
like
they really finished the Pawns arc, and they could have finished
very
it
speedily.
at the one season, which starts with Amelia and ends with the new universe. You don't need to go beyond that to have the perfect
they could
arc.
They could have, and I thought they actually had. I thought they wrapped them out at that point.
I thought the second Matt Smith season was overall not very good, which includes the whole reveal
whole
Melody Pond and all that stuff.
Oh, I like the old reveal.
Well, the reveal, it wasn't that bad, but it wasn't worth that whole season, and the silence sucked.
Well, yeah, that was a whole other thing. And the iPads,
you know, they're really.
Though I did like the Demon Run climax. I mean, that was sort of fun.
Yeah, there were a couple of good out of 13 episodes.
Yeah.
The previous season, there were 11 out of 13
episodes.
And the following season, there were two out of 11.
One
good
out of five
episodes.
Isn't satisfying.
You know, and one of them, the one that has won all the awards and is written by our friend Neil Gaiman, I have issues with things about the Doctor's wife. I think that there are a couple of questions.
That starts with the title for you. Do you have any curiosities what the screwdriver sounds like in the Doctor Who mode?
Oh, dear.
Whoops. Well, that's one sound.
Okay.
It sounds much the same with a little bit
it
of
It sounds
reverb.
Just the same, yeah, but
it's
actually
a little bit
better, because a little bit of reverb.
It gives
it
a little
in.
More depth in there.
There we go. And speaking of a little bit more depth, this has been our Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you for listening. I have no idea if I'm on next week. Are you on next week, Lister? You don't know
no
either.
No one knows.
Yeah, heaven knows. It's but if we are, I certainly hope that we get more pledges, which is to say one, than we did this morning. But thank you, Terrence Taylor.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
For being
me.
Here. And don't forget to look up Terrence Taylor on your preferred bookseller for Bite Marks and
Blood Pressure.
And Blood Pressure is two novels.
You can go to doyoubelieveinvampires.com to find out more.
Yes.
And fetching little videos of me reading from
them. Oh, there you go. Okay, so again, thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clappers with Lister coming. Not a Red Dwarf reference, but nevertheless, it is what it is. Take care and have a wonderful week. Good morning. Happy October.
Just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn.
99 Cinco Lista Live right here. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. That's the number. Burn, baby, burn. The Begathon is on. It's the third day. Third day. 212-209-2950. Yeah. Boring, 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 boring debate. Oh, Romney versus Obama. Boring, boring, boring. Yeah. You know? Yo, when you take a stock, you come to the conclusion that Obama should be in jail with the too big to be jailed criminals, y'all. 212-209-2950, and you call this democracy. '99 sink a burn, baby burn in the streets of Spain, in the streets of Greece. What about imperialist America?
Je repense à notre enfance, pas toujours aisée, sans trop dramatiser. Ce n'était pas toujours rose, c'est peut-être ce qui nous a motivés. L'esprit était janek, maman, petit vagabond, à tête grainée. On préférait sécher les cours et rester spané au quartier. L'excès de curiosité était tel qu'on s'enjaillait en suivant les aînés qui étaient pour nous des modèles à l'époque. Dans les hauts lieux,
99 Cinq, this is the Begathon. We need two callers at the $25 level right here at 212-209-2950. Having seen that, boring, boring, more of the same, a broken infomercial, a broken infomercial, a proof of a thing that makes you come to the conclusion that democracy is illegal in America. Let me correct that. Democracy is illegal in imperialist USA. Burn, baby, burn the red, white, and blue until Esther comes in, y'all.
Benji, tu te souviens ce qui nous a donné l'envie d'écrire? L'oreille scotché sur nos bars, d'écouter MC qui déjà nos premières rimes naissent. Les jeux de mots, puis les jeux de scène ne cessent de s'enchaîner. Des MJC au son de système. Et puis on a un éclair, nous voici sous les projecteurs. On s'adapte et on domine professionnel ou amateur. Tu le sais, c'est la monnaie qui dirige le monde. C'est la monnaie qui dirige la terre. Propulse au sommet des hits de là, tout s'est passé si vite. C'est boule de neige, premier album, studio, promo, clip, vidéo. Les necks marrons s'exportent en live et prennent tous les publics. Dans les quatre coins de la France, on est parti foutre le dawa. Comme dans les avant-premières de Steel Pulse, les Fuji, ils arrivent pas. On a tout déchiré le 22 mai à l'Olympia pour baptiser le concert mythique avec tout le secteur A. La musique m'a mis au fichal, qu'est-ce que j'aurais fait sans elle? J'ai esquivé les plans couchal, aujourd'hui je kiffe grâce à elle. Le temps passé, 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 beaucoup de choses ont changé. Qui aurait pu s'imaginer que le temps serait si vite écoulé? On fait le bilan, calmement, se remémorant chaque instant. Parler des histoires d'avant comme si on avait 50 ans. Le temps passé, 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 beaucoup de choses ont changé. Qui aurait pu s'imaginer que le temps serait si vite écoulé?
99 Cinco, great show this morning. Robert Knight on the case. Burn, baby, burn style. Jim Freund on the case. Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Regarde, ça se passe, tu brilles des pieds à la tête. Blanche basket de l'or au poignet jusqu'aux lunettes quartier. Pas plus que toi, négro, respect au Congo. Toutes les rats me parlent de toi et de l'isola.
Terry Wilson on the case.
Merci, mais dis-leur que je suis plus
burn, même. Baby, burn, y'all. 212-209-2950. We need three callers at the $25 level. We got a $25 matching fund. If you're financially challenged, you've just got $20. You want to be a buddy of WS. WSB Stony Brook, that's on a Saturday. But today is Thursday. Be a buddy of WBAI. 212-209-2950. Yes, I am. Let's do it. Let's do it. Three telephone calls at the 25 level. First time caller, first time listener. In your 26th wheeler, you know what to do, y'all. Lister gives away two tickets to go see this artist at the Barclay Prison. A big disgrace. You listening to me? The Barclay Prison, Atlantic Avenue and Flatbush. Yeah. Name this artist, the first caller, 212-209-2950, but you got a pledge, y'all.
Girl, you're my angel, you're my darling. closer than my peeps you are to me, baby.
The Barclay Prison. Yeah.
You're my darling.
Brooklyn, Barclay Prison. Name this artist.
Girl,
first caller. Burn, baby, burn. Uh-huh. Yes, I.
Life is one big party when you're still young. But who's gonna have your back when it's all done?
Yeah.
It's all good when you live for your pure fun. Can't be a fool, son. What about the long run?
Yeah.
Looking back, shorty, always a mention. Say me not giving her much attention.
Yeah.
She was there through my incarceration. I wanna show the nation my appreciation.
Girl, you're my angel. You're my darling angel. Closer than my peeps you are to me, baby. Shorty, you're my angel. You're my darling angel. Girl, you're my friend when I'm in need, lady.
You're a queen and that's how you should be treated. Though you never get the loving that you needed.
Yeah.
Could have left but I call and you heeded. Begged and I pleaded, mission completed. And I said that I and I this the program. Not the type to mess around with your emotion.
Yeah.
But the feeling that I have for you is so strong. Been together so long and this could never be wrong.
Girl, you're my angel. You're my darling angel. Closer than my peeps you are to me. Shorty, you're my angel. You're my darling angel. Girl, you're my friend when I'm in need.
Girl, instead of my behavior, say I'm a savior.
You must be sent from up above.